Welcome to A Theater in the Dark's A White Whale, or Moby Dick. Our show is adapted from Herman Melville's novel and directed by Corey Bradbury. A White Whale was originally presented live on the internet in April 2021, with performers broadcasting in real time from Chicago, on the traditional homelands of the Council of the Three Fires, the Ojibwe, Odawa, and Potawatomi nations, in addition to the Miami, Peora, and Kickapoo tribes, from Vancouver, the traditional and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish nations, and from New Orleans, the traditional territory of the Chittimaca, Choctaw, Houma, Tunica, and Cushota tribes. To hear our show unabridged, or to hear other audio offerings, find us online at atheaterinthedark.com.
Call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely, having little or no money in my purse, I thought I'd sail about a bit and see the watery part of the world. Whenever I find myself growing grim about the mouth, whenever it's a damp November in my drizzly soul, whenever I find myself involuntarily pausing before coffin warehouses and bringing up the rear of every funeral I meet, I account it's high time to get to sea, and I take quietly to the ship. There is no surprise in this. All folks, in their degree, some time or other, cherish very nearly the same feelings towards the oceans with me. Look at the water-bathing crowd on the Great Lake in Chicago, or more widely, any port or harbor on a dreamy Sunday afternoon. What do you see? Thousands of faces fixed in wet reveries. These are all landsmen. On weekdays, tied up in plaster, nailed to benches, clenched to desks. Nothing will content them but the extremest limits of the land. The shade of those warehouses and offices will not suffice. Here, they all unite. Tell me, if you can, does the magnetic quality of all the compass needles of all the vessels in the world draw them there? Were Niagara Falls but a cataract of sand, would you travel your 1,000 miles to see it? Why did the Persians hold the ocean holy? Why did the Greeks and Romans give it a separate deity? Deeper still, the meaning of the myth of Narcissus, who saw his own image in the water, then dove after it and drowned. That same face we see in rivers, lakes, and oceans is the face of the ungraspable phantom of life, and this is the key to it all.
Scene. The wharf at Nantucket, beach and sea, several whaling ships are moored.
Nantucket. Take out your map and look at it. See what a real corner of the world it occupies. There is more sand there than you'd use in 20 years of sandbags for sails. All beach without a background. An anthill on the sea. There were 3 ships up for 3 years' voyages, all charted to hunt whales and seek whale oil. The Titbit, Devil Dam, and the ship's deck that was the very ship for me, the Pequod. You may have seen many a quaint craft in your day. Square-tied luggers, buttered box galleots, but take my word for it. You never saw such a rare old craft as this same rare old Pequod with an old-fashioned claw-footed look about her. Long season and weathered stain from typhoons and calm waters. Her mast stood stiffly up like the spines of 3 old kings, though the ship was rather small, if anything. Her ancient decks were worn and wrinkled, but for all her old antiques, there were new and marvelous features pertaining the wild business that she, for more than 50 years, had followed. She's a thing of trophies.
She's a cannibal of a craft, shaped like one continuous jaw around those paneled bulwarks. Instead of wooden pins, the long, sharp teeth of sperm whales. Pretty sharkish, eh, then, lad?
Are you the captain of the Pequod?
Supposing it be. What do you want of him?
I was thinking of shipping.
You were you? Name?
Call me Ishmael.
Any experience in a sinking boat?
No, sir.
Know nothing at all about whaling, I dare say, eh?
I've been in several voyages in the merchant service, and I'm a quick learner.
Look at your leg. I'll take that leg away from your body if you ever talk about the merchant service again. I suppose you feel considerable proud of having served in those merchant ships. But flukes, lad, what makes you want to go a-whaling? I want to know before I think of shipping you.
I want to see what whaling is. I want to see the world.
Want to see what whaling is, eh? Have you clapped eyes on Captain Ahab?
Who's Captain Ahab, sir?
I thought so. Captain Ahab is the captain of the ship. He's a grand, ungodly, godlike man, Captain Ahab. Doesn't speak much, but when he does, you listen.
Excuse me, then. I thought I was speaking to the captain himself.
You're speaking to Third Mate Stubb, part owner and agent with Captains Peleg and Bildad. And if you want to know what whaling is, I'll put you on the way of finding out before binding yourself past backing out to a 3-year voyage. Captain Ahab only has one leg.
What do you mean? Was the other lost by a whale?
Lost by a whale? Young man, it was devoured, chewed up, crunched by the monstrosest Parmaciti that ever chipped a boat.
How could you tell one whale from another?
Don't talk shark to me. Your lungs are soft. You said you've been to sea before. Are you sure of that?
Sir, I told you that I had been 4 voyages in the merchant service.
Who's this?
Ah, Mr. Starbuck. This young man says he wants to join the Pequod. Says he's our man, Mr. Starbuck. Says he wants 3 years of beef and board.
All right, then. Let's understand each other. I heard Mr. Stubb give thee a hint about whaling. Are you still inclined for it?
I am.
Art thou the sort of man to pitch a harpoon down a live whale's throat and then jump after it? Quick!
I am, sir, if it should be positively indispensable to do so. Not to be got rid of, that is.
And I heard you want to go in order to see the world. Was that not what you said? Take a step there and peep to the horizon. Well, what's the report? What do you see?
Not much.
What do you think of the world? Do you wish to see any more of it?
I was struck dumb. These 2 mates regarded me with 4 eyes that might as well have been 1 discerning pair as I repeated my intent to go a-whaling.
Look at him. He's determined, if nothing else. He'll do. Make your mark on the papers.
I was signed for the 300th lay. If we had a lucky voyage, it might pay for the clothing I'd wear out on it. And where's Captain Ahab to be found?
You like him well enough. No fear, no fear.
Yes, but I should like to see him.
He's kept close inside his house, a sort of sick. Won't always see me. He's a queer man, Captain Ahab, but a good one. And besides, he has a young child, a girl. Ahab has his humanities.
Better to sail with a moody good captain than a laughing bad one.
As I walked away, I was full of thoughtfulness, sympathy, pain, sorrow, awe, and impatience.
Shipmate! Have ye shipped in that ship? Have ye shipped in her?
I suppose you mean the Pequod.
Aye, the Pequod, that ship there. You no doubt know the origin of the name.
They were a celebrated tribe of Massachusetts natives now extinct.
Extinct! Extinct! Wiped out! Slaughtered, more like. Slaughtered by us in retaliation for who knows what. And now you've shipped in their namesake.
I've signed my articles.
Anything in there about your soul?
About what?
Perhaps you haven't got any. Many chaps have it. He's got enough, though.
What are you jabbering about?
You haven't seen old thunder yet, have you?
Who's old thunder?
Captain Ahab! Among some of us old sailor chaps, he goes by that name, yet haven't seen him.
I've heard he's sick, but getting better. He'll be all right before long.
All right before long. When Ahab's all right, this left arm of mine will be all right. Not before.
What do you know about him?
What did they tell you about him?
I've heard he's a fine whale hunter and a good captain to his crew.
Jump when he gives an order, step and growls the way of Ahab. But nothing of his death-like dizzy spells, eh? Nothing about the blasphemy he spat upon a holy altar. Oh, of course you've heard tell about the leg and how he lost it.
What is this gibberish of yours about? I know all about the loss of his leg.
All about it, eh? Sure you do all.
Pretty sure.
Well, what's signed is signed, what's to be will be. But then again, maybe it won't after all. Morning to ye, shipmate. I'm sorry I stopped ye. Shan't see you again very soon, I guess. Unless it's just before the grand jury. You're just the man for the likes of him. Morning to ye, shipmate. Morning. Sharp frost is Christmas Eve, ain't it?
The Massachusetts sky had changed from clear, sunny, cold to driving sleet and mist.
New Bedford Whaleman's Chapel mourning. A small, scattered congregation of sailors, sailors' wives, and widows, all silent in prayer. Enter Ishmael.
Few are the moody fishermen who, shortly bound for the Indian or Pacific, failed to make a visit to this chapel. Yes, in this business of wailing, there is death. The architect of this small church had made this pulpit in the way of a ship's bow, minus stairs but adding a rope ladder. Each silent worshiper seemed purposely sitting 6 feet apart from the other, as if each silent grief were insular and incommunicable. Faith feeds among the tombs, and from these few it gathers its most vital hope.
In memory of my shipmates Robert Long, Willis Ellery, Nathan Coleman, Walter Canny, Seth Macy, and Samuel Gleig, forming one of the boat's crews of the ship Eliza, who were towed out of sight by a whale in the distance.
In memory of my son John Talbot, who at 18 was lost overboard near the Isle of Desolation.
For the memory of my captain, the late Captain Ezekiel Hardy, who was killed in the bowels of his boat by a sperm whale on the coast of Japan, 1833, August 3rd.
The famous chaplain, Father Mapple, mounts the ladder rope as if ascending the main top of a vessel.
Beloved shipmates, clinch the last verse of the first chapter of Jonah. And God had prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah. Shipmates, this book, containing only four chapters, is one of the smallest strands in the scriptures. Yet what depths
that night,
Jonah's sea lines
chief
down.
Among my well, dreams was the great whale itself. Such a mysterious monster roused all my curiosity as the great floodgates of the wonder world swung open in an endless procession of the whale. A 3-year voyage was more than welcome.
Aboard the Pequod's deck next morning, a Christmas sunrise as the crew assembles in twos and threes.
Now, Mr. Starbuck, are we sure everything is right? Nothing more to be got from shore, eh? Ahab's all ready. Just spoke to him. I'll call all hands, then.
Muster aft here! Last year! Strike the tent there! Prepare to heave anchor! Man the capstan!
Hold him! Thunder! Jump!
As for Captain Ahab, no sign of him was yet to be seen. I heard he was in his cabin, where by all appearance... Oh!
Is that the way they heave in the merchant service? Spring, you sheephead, and break your backbone. Spring your eyes out.
Ship and shore diverge. A screaming gull flies overhead as the hull wildly rolls. We give three heavy-hearted cheers and blindly plunge, like fate, into the Atlantic.
Our owners charge us wishes for a Merry Christmas, and they hope we'll have fine weather. I'll see ye 3 Christmases from now, Nantucket.
On the Atlantic Ocean, main deck, evening.
Oh, the air, the whole world before us. Sharing a ship with 30 souls. Our crew from every part of the world, Dutch and French, from Malta and China, old Manx men and Sicilian sailors, from all across the wide Americas, all called the Pequod home. The first mate, Starbuck, we've already met. Starbuck was no crusader after perils. In him, courage was not a sentiment, but a tool to be used.
I will have no man in my boat who is not afraid of a whale. I'm in this ocean to kill whales for my living, not to be killed by them for theirs.
Stubb, the second mate. Happy-go-lucky, neither craven nor valiant. Good-humored, easy, careless. He always kept a pipe within easy reach. The third mate, Flask. A short, stout, ruddy fellow. The Pequod's 3 daring harpooners. Queequeg, an island prince in exile who had come to be a very dear friend. Tashtego, from the First Nation near Martha's Vineyard. And Dagoo, a coal-black African who walked with a lion's tread. The three mates are always accompanied by their harpooners in their smaller whaleboats when a whale's near. And Pip! Poor little Alabama Pip, beating his tambourine, unaware of the approaching time when the young black boy would be called home to heaven. For several days after leaving Nantucket, every time I ascended to the deck from my watches below, I instantly gazed aft to mark if any strange face were visible. Nothing above hatches was seen of Captain Ahab as we drifted out to sea with purpose. The mates relieved each other at the watches. They seemed to be the only commanders of the ship. Yet their supreme lord and dictator was there, unseen by any eyes not permitted to penetrate into the now sacred retreat of his cabin.
Queequeg says, "Look, Captain Ahab stands upon the quarter deck."
Reality outran apprehensions. He looked like a man cut away at the stake when the fire has wasted all the limbs without consuming them. Skin and muscle all intact. His whole high, broad form seemed made of solid bronze. Threading its way out from among his gray hairs and continuing right down one side of his tawny, scorched face and neck till it disappeared in his clothes, you saw a slender scar, white and livid. There seemed no sign of bodily illness about him, and his missing leg. Each side of the Pequod's quarter deck, there was a half-inch hole bored into the plank. His bone leg steadied into that hole.
That's a straight, lofty trunk of a great tree, isn't it, Queequeg?
No, Ishmael. That leg's ivory, carved from the jaw of a sperm whale.
Ahab stood erect. Not a word he spoke, nor did his officers say anything to him. Ahab wore a crucifixion on his face, an uncrowned king bearing some mighty woe.
Thank you for listening to A Theater in the Dark's A White Whale or Moby Dick, adapted from the novel by Herman Melville by Corey Bradbury. Tonight's show was originally presented live over the internet and performed by Elizabeth McCoy as Ishmael, Mac Gordon as Starbuck and Stub, and Robinson J. Cyprian as Ahab. Nick Montopoli created our original music, soundscapes by Mac Gordon with Corey Bradbury. Special thanks to Bethany Daigle, John Olson Communications, and Solana Oliver. I've been your stage manager, director, and sound engineer, Corey Bradbury. A White Whale or Moby Dick was produced by myself, Mac Gordon, Jake Kaufman, and Bridget Chief Grace. A Theater in the Dark creates stories through sound, and we're just a couple of artists that love storytelling. If you enjoyed the performance, please tell a friend or post about us on social media. You can also find on-demand streaming options of our audio plays and can support us directly through our website, atheaterinthedark.com. And thank you for supporting Chicago's A Theater in the Dark. Welcome, everyone. This is Corey Bradbury. I'm the director and adapter of A White Whale, and I have the pleasure of speaking with our Ishmael of the production, Elizabeth McCoy.
Hi, everyone. I'm Elizabeth, and I played Ishmael.
We'll just chat for a couple of minutes about the show. Now it's been a few months since we premiered this when we're talking now. What was it like, especially thinking a few months ago? I'm curious to hear, like, your relationship with Ishmael as far as your experience with the book and then experience with the script and maybe how you developed that character.
Yeah, my relationship to Ishmael was, you know, he's a character that I identified with very much, especially that opening monologue about water. I live in New Orleans, and so obviously the Mississippi River is an important body of water to us, along with Lake Pontchartrain down here. So I'm surrounded by water, I'm surrounded by swamps, and it's something that's always been important to me in my life. I don't like being in a landlocked state or a landlocked city. I love to be near the water, and I feel like most people are that way. You know, I feel like most people don't enjoy, you know, there's some people who are like, yeah, I want to live in the desert. But that opening monologue, I feel, resonates with a lot of people, that you do realize, oh, yeah, we do want to go to this great expanse, you know, to the water. That opening monologue, really, obviously, there was some work that had to go into it, but it was just something that I identified with. And, you know, reading Melville's original words in the book, it just spoke to me, and I feel like it speaks to a lot of people. You know, that's why people love this novel, and it's been around for so long.
Yeah, and I know as the adapter too, I did add one line specifically to reference Chicago and our production, only because I've been so, of course, influenced by that. And now it being summertime after the pandemic, and every time I drive by Lakeshore or I'm taking my bike, it's just filled with people that want to get right up to the shore or the edge of the water, even if they're on the concrete sections, you know, or the beaches. It doesn't seem to matter. How did you use that foundation then to move Ishmael forward? Obviously, I think with the book, Ishmael has many, many, many different slices, and people pull different interpretations of the character from that. How did you build your Ishmael? Did you go back to the book at all? Did you just take it from the script itself? Was there a combination of things you did in preparation for rehearsal?
Yeah, there were definitely a combination of things. You know, as an actor, it's important to imbue everything and to make sure you have a clear picture, because especially when you're dealing with this amount of text, so many words, you don't have time to sit there and think, oh, okay, well, let me build this out more. You just don't have time. So it's got to be like right there in your mind, ready to go. So, you know, doing research on the text and the script, it was really lovely, since with your adaptation, you pulled so much directly from the book. You know, reading through the book, it was great to go through and find those sentences or those words that you pulled directly from the book, and then realize that in the original novel, Melville wrote, you know, maybe two more paragraphs on what your like one little sentence was. So for me, it was easy, because normally you have to imbue and you have to sit there with your imagination, which is fun. That's, you know, I'm not complaining about that, but using the novel, it was just like, oh, it's all right there. All the descriptions are there, or in detail text about this or that. It made the process simple. I mean, it's a long novel, so, you know, you gotta go through that. But,
you know, a lot of people have responded in terms of our production as it being like a really lean approach, which it certainly was in terms of fitting it in the time length that we set for ourselves. So like how, for example, in the Wheelman's Chapel, would you take a line that you know has two paragraphs of additional description in Melville's text and boil it down to the essence through the delivery and your craft as an actor?
It all comes down to like what you have in your mind's eye or what you're picturing in your mind to make it real, you know, because right now I'm sitting in a little closet and I was sitting in the same little closet doing the show and not in an actual Wheelman's Chapel.
You didn't go on location for all those?
No, I didn't. I didn't go on location. I did not go up to Nantucket each night.
And I will also point out just for our listeners too, even though we say it in the pre-show, that this was presented live in sequence. So connecting with other actors in all of their individual sound booths in separate spaces.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. it's so wild each night, especially that night when my internet cut out. It was great.
Oh, right. We have to put on the record, Elizabeth performed through a hurricane, through her phone, the wonders of technology. Really incredible.
Yes.
Well, maybe then my final question would be, you know, now that you're a few months away from it, how do you view Ishmael? Like, where do you think Ishmael is when he's telling us the story from a future point in his life?
I take his sense of adventure, and I feel like his sense of adventure is still there, but the story affects him in such a way. I mean, being in his position, you know, you're sailing on the seas with these people, and these people are really the only people you get to know besides the other ships that come up or if you dock somewhere, you know, mm-hmm. But these people are your family. And Ishmael, you know, everyone, because we don't know much about his backstory, so everyone who plays Ishmael or everyone who reads Ishmael definitely has a different idea of where he came from and who he is. But for me, it's just, I can't imagine the guilt, just even regret, you know, just what he's feeling towards the end. But I love that, I don't know, in a sense, there's fate, and it's a story that my feelings towards my past, and sometimes you want to go back and you want to do things differently or what have you, but it's just the sense of moving forward, and maybe you don't know 100% why you are here right now, but it's got to mean something. Maybe it doesn't mean anything at all, but you got to keep going. And that's something I've taken away from playing Ishmael.